Spectrum Management Responsibilities in Electronic System Design, prepared by Herbert M. Sachs of Sachs Freeman Associates, Incorporated, Hyattsville, Maryland. Chances are that you are listening to this tape because you are directly involved or plan to be involved in the design of a communications or radar system. Maybe you're just curious about how a subject called spectrum management can relate to your work. After all, the job of assigning frequencies is a game played at high government levels, while your business is planning signal processing logic or writing the specs on a YIG-tuned RF amplifier mixer circuit. Or maybe you've heard somewhere that someone built a great pulse compression radar or a clever security alarm system, but the equipment was never used or sold because approval to go on the air could not be obtained. You want some clues that will prevent this from happening to your system. Whatever your reason, I hope that by the time you finish playing this tape, you've become convinced of two things. One is that spectrum management is not an ivory tower concept practiced only at the FCC or the Pentagon, but is a very real requirement that can be supported by design engineers. The other is that there are very specific areas designers can zero in on that can materially affect the spectrum usage of an equipment or system. As a starter, let's see if we can agree on a definition for one of the words I've already used several times. That word is spectrum. The usual interpretation of the term spectrum is as an electromagnetic frequency measurer. That's why the words spectrum and frequency spectrum are often considered synonymous. We talk about a VOR transmitter operating at 112.3 MHz, or a master clock frequency of 140 kHz, or a filter cutoff frequency of 8.6 MHz, usually imagining these values as points on a one-dimensional scale of frequency values. This frequency spectrum has had to respond to the demands of hundreds of communications and electronics applications and millions of users for space in which to operate. In recent years, these demands have reached almost astronomical proportions. Since the frequency spectrum is a limited commodity, the trick is to increase its efficiency of use so that more systems and services can be accommodated. This definition of spectrum, one having to do with frequency usage, turns out to be a very limiting one. A simple example should help to explain this limitation. Consider two identical radio links, with the two links having the same information requirements. One of the links is designed to operate satisfactorily using a fairly narrow frequency band. The other link employs a much wider spectral bandwidth, but all of the energy from the transmitter to the receiver goes over an interconnecting coaxial cable. Which system uses less spectrum? Is it the one that operates over the narrower frequency range, or, and here's where we try to expand our definition of spectrum, is it the one that minimizes the potential of interference to or from other equipment in the operational environment? What I've just tried to point out is that the term spectrum, at least when used in the context of spectrum usage or spectrum management, is more than a frequency criterion. It includes other factors that can affect our ability to cram higher densities of operating equipment into a given amount of space. What are these other factors or dimensions that can affect the utilization of the spectrum? Well, one is directivity. If the system being designed could transmit and receive energy only in a direction necessary to establish and maintain communications, and not in any other direction, it would be immune from a nearby system operating on the same frequency but not located along the intended path of communications. High-gain, narrow-beamwidth, common carrier system antennas offer this kind of potential. Another factor is range, or how close two elements of separate systems can be before one interferes with the other. Here's where trade-offs in power budgeting can pay off in improved spectrum usage. Here's why some links have been found to perform better at lower receiver sensitivities, and others, usually digital systems, may work better with a restricted receiver dynamic range. Still another factor is time. Co-channel equipment can operate together if they timeshare. An obvious example is the sharing of frequencies in the land mobile radio services, where message lengths are relatively short. A not-so-obvious example is synchronizing pulse-tracking radars to a common clock to prevent the energy from one system falling in the receiver range gate of the other. So our new definition of spectrum is very multidimensional. Its parameters are frequency, direction, which may be frequency-dependent, range, which may be both frequency and direction-dependent, and time. The job of the hardware designer is to keep these dimensions in mind, so that a system is ultimately developed that trades off interference potential in some optimal way. How this is done is another matter. Sometimes the savings in spectrum will be obvious when using a particular design technique. The implications of a lower receiver noise figure or of a particular transmitter output filter design can generally be assessed quite readily. But very often, the answer may not be nearly so obvious. You may have the feeling you are holding on to a rubber balloon filled with air, and when you squeeze it in one place, it bulges out in two others. Methods have been developed to get a better handle on these bulges. Attempts have been made to establish figures of merit that can represent levels of spectral efficiency or communications capacity. To one degree or another, the measures look at the effectiveness with which systems use the frequency, space, time spectrum, giving the best grades to those that use less frequency, that interfere with or are susceptible to equipments located over smaller geographical regions, and that have smaller operational duty cycles. One factor should now be clear. In order for you to investigate many trade-offs that have spectrum usage implications, it will be necessary for you to have a pretty good idea of the planned operational environment of the equipment you are designing. By planned operational environment, I mean the geographical deployments and electrical characteristics of nearby devices that might interfere with or be interfered with by your equipment. We've talked, or I should say, I've talked about the many possible dimensions of spectrum control. Now let's get more specific and discuss things you as a system designer can and should do to help maintain this control. Although it may not be immediately obvious, the key parameter in this game is very often modulation. Not only is the choice of modulation critical to the performance of a system when it is competing against noise, but it is equally critical when the system is competing against interference. Many, many investigators have analyzed and measured the performance of receivers in noise and when subjected to both like and unlike modulation interference. Their results against interference describe the required receiver input signal-to-interference ratio as a function of the modulation parameters, the difference in tuned frequencies or the channel spacings, and the performance criteria employed for the evaluation. The performance criteria may be a level of output signal-to-interference ratio, a change in the signal-to-interference ratio, such as a 6 dB threshold on a 12 dB SYNAD signal, a particular value of error probability, or some other applicable criterion. Each type of modulation will influence spectrum usage in two ways. First, the bandwidth of the modulation will directly affect the efficiency with which the radio frequency spectrum is utilized, and will have an obvious bearing on system guard band requirements. And second, the relative susceptibility of a receiver designed to accept a given modulation will dictate tolerable equipment separations against environmental systems and control the extent to which frequencies can become reusable. The influence of antenna directivity on spectrum control is fairly obvious. Minimum antenna gain, beamwidth limits, scan characteristics, and several other antenna parameters will probably be tied down by system design requirements. But some parameters, particularly major and minor side lobe levels, back lobe level, perhaps polarization, can often be traded off in terms of cost and in terms of co-channel and adjacent channel equipment density. Next, while system design and layout are still flexible, consider carefully the design options available that might provide more efficient spectrum usage at little or no increase in cost. These considerations are limited only by your ability to generate reasonable design alternatives. Let's look at a couple of simple ones. I'm developing a police land mobile system for an area in which sharing will be required on already heavily trafficked channels. The original plan is for repeaters to relay mobile transmissions back to the base. As one means of conserving spectrum, how about going to remote receivers to pick up the transmissions and then sending the messages over landlines or a microwave link to base? This would have the effect of reducing the loading on the mobile to base link, at least from the viewpoint of other equipment in the environment. Or assume I'm designing a high repetition rate tracking radar that will operate in a band that many other tracking radars use. Its pulse repetition rate is derived from a basic clock that also feeds timing signals to other elements of a complex acquisition and tracking system. It appears that this precisely controlled repetition rate can lock onto the range gates of some of the environmental receivers. As a means of conserving spectrum, how about using a separate repetition rate generator for my radar and adding sufficient pulse jitter to reduce the probability of a series of pulses falling in the range gate of an environmental receiver? I might even be able to achieve co-channel equipment operation this way. I'm sure you can think of other types of design changes, perhaps involving your own system, that would not materially affect intended performance, but could improve the spectrum usage situation. Maybe it would be a different transmitter frequency synthesis approach to control spurious output emissions. Maybe it would involve the addition of hard limiting in a receiver AGC loop. to reduce desensitization effects of pulse interference. Maybe it would consist of a better choice of components or circuits, such as a lower noise amplitron or balanced mixer instead of a single-ended mixer stage. You have options limited only by your own background and imagination. The selection of equipment tuning ranges is dictated by the requirements of the system you are designing and the constraints imposed by government regulations. Many times, the band of frequencies in which a system can operate is controlled by very practical constraints. Antenna size becomes unreasonable below some frequency, or I can't get the range capability I need above some frequency, or hardware to do the job doesn't exist in this range, and the only alternative to using the proposed band is to not design the system at all. However, in other cases where alternative bands of operation are possible, spectrum usage considerations can be included in the trade-off game. There's one thing the designer can almost always do to help in the frequency assignment task that will eventually take place. That is to provide the system with a broad tuning capability. This will give the operational people a better ability to select usable operating frequencies for the system when it eventually gets into the field. In very broad terms, the objectives in spectrum management design are usually to keep emissions as low as possible, sensitivities as poor as possible, bandwidths as narrow as possible, and operating times as short as possible. I say usually because there are circumstances when better results may be obtained if these rules are violated, but these are still good guidelines to follow. During these past few minutes, I've tried to provide you with an appreciation for spectrum management at the equipment design level and some general ideas of how spectrum management considerations can be implemented. This appreciation, I hope, has included my interpretation of spectrum control as having to deal with not only frequency, but with space and time factors as well. I haven't attempted to tell you that achieving effective spectrum control is as easy or straightforward as designing a differential amplifier circuit or a Chebyshev filter. No set of system design procedures or requirements, no series of tests and test procedures, no preparation of interference control plans by themselves will answer your system's spectrum management needs. What is needed? As a first step, design engineers must have an appreciation for the necessity to conserve the spectrum and the savvy to come up with workable technical methods of achieving this conservation. DATE, Dial Access Technical Education, is an IEEE continuing education activity. It is brought to you by the Institute of Electrical and Electronics Engineers, 345 East 47th Street, New York, New York, 10017.